The Undivided Podcast is brought to you by 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. Today, we take an in-depth look at the genesis of House Bill 1692, a now controversial proposal out of Washington State that would ease penalties for drive-by shooters who kill. We hear from the brother of a drive-by shooting victim killed in 1997, what he has to say about the possibility that this bill could set his brother's killer free.
Maybe he did change for the better, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be in prison still.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the Undivided Podcast on this New Year's Eve, the final day of 2021. What a year it has been. I don't know if 2021 was worse than 2020. 2020 had a whole lot of stuff going on. I feel like 2021 was, it was just fine. So I don't know what my expectations are for the next year. I don't know how you guys are spending your New Year's Eve either. I am doing a very anti-fringy thing, and I'm going to Chappelle's comedy show at the Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle.
I don't know why or how everybody got this goddamn sensitive.
Chappelle is on the cancel culture list as of late. Some people think he's anti-transgender. He had a Netflix special that was all controversial, and people are trying to cancel him. And he's like, no, I'm not going to be canceled because being canceled is a state of mind. And I know that ahead of this show in Seattle, which I'm actually surprised he risked coming to one of the most progressive cities in America, because I really thought there was a real chance that Climate Pledge would cancel, because Seattle Pride, for instance, was saying that Climate Pledge should cancel the show. But I am very happy to be going. Our friend Jeff got us tickets, and my boyfriend was like, do you want to go to Chappelle? I'm like, yeah. And he goes, oh, I didn't think you'd want to be seen there, you know, with your job and stuff. And I'm like, first of all, I don't work for anyone anymore. And I don't think my listeners are going to cancel me for going to Chappelle. And I'm super excited. And I even had said previously that if they canceled Chappelle, I would never go to Climate Pledge Arena again if they bowed to pressure. And I really love the Kraken game. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I hope they don't cancel Chappelle. And they haven't. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing that show. I do believe that transgender rights are human rights, and I consider myself an ally. But I also consider Chappelle to be very funny.
I believe transgenders. I don't understand them either, but I know they mean what they say.
So anyway, on Monday, I'll tell you how the show was. But I'm very much looking forward to it. I've already heard from some Undivided subscribers who are going to be there as well. Matt told me he's taking his wife for her birthday. And so I hope to see some of you actually at Chappelle. And please say hello if you see me. I'll probably be a little tipsy. It is New Year's Eve after all. But please, please do come say hello if you see me tonight. All right. I want to do something a little different on the podcast today. I want to spend the rest of our time talking about House Bill 1692. Last week, with the help of an Undivided subscriber, I broke news about this bill that has been proposed, pre-filed ahead of the 2022 legislative session in Washington State. And House Bill 1692 would ease penalties for drive-by shooters who kill. Essentially, in Washington State, there are a list of 19 aggravating factors that if you commit murder in the first degree, which is typically premeditated murder, and it also includes one of 19 other aggravating factors, the only sentence possible under the law is life in prison with no possibility of parole. So some of the aggravating factors among the 19 are killing a law enforcement officer, killing a judge, killing a juror, killing a journalist in the course of their duties. A murder for hire is an aggravating factor, and committing a drive-by shooting is an aggravating factor as well. And so this bill proposed by two Democrats would remove drive-by shootings, and they say that it's in the name of racial equity. They say that drive-bys was added as an aggravating factor basically with the purpose of targeting gang members who were predominantly Black. Now, I've been very firm that I think this bill is absolutely ridiculous. The hyper-focus on helping criminals as opposed to helping crime victims is something I just can't wrap my mind around. I know there's a lot of conversation to be had about criminal justice reform. There's a lot of aspects of criminal justice reform that I support. But at a time of rising crime, where we've had an uptick in gang shootings in the south end of Seattle and beyond, I just don't understand why this is the priority of these two Democratic lawmakers this session. So I talked about this earlier on the podcast and said that I was trying to get in touch with those lawmakers to have them on the show. And, you know, I said, I'll be open heart, open mind, and we can have a conversation about why you believe this bill is appropriate. We've reached out to both of them and did not hear back from Representative David Hackney at all. I did hear back from a spokesperson for Representative Tara Simmons. Now, Tara Simmons is someone I've spoke to several times before. I think she has a wonderful story. She's the first formerly incarcerated person to serve in the State House of Representatives. She is a convicted felon, but she has obviously turned her life around in a very meaningful way. And because of her past experiences, she focuses a lot of her legislation on criminal justice reform. Well, I had reached out to Tara last Friday, hadn't heard back, finally did hear back from her folks on Monday. And I will say, I was really disappointed in the response. So this is from a spokesperson for Tara Simmons. Hi, Brandy. Rep. Simmons is out of the office this week and unavailable for an interview. I have included a statement from her below. She is disappointed that you didn't reach out to her for context before you published your piece. First of all, I did reach out to her. Usually she's pretty good at getting back to emails directly. The bill was dropped on a Thursday, day before Christmas Eve. I reached out to her the very next day after seeing it. And we published a segment on Sunday. So, you know, in all fairness, she could have weighed in on the Sunday segment. I mean, I know it was a holiday weekend, but news doesn't pause. So I don't understand the disappointment there. But anyway, so they provided a statement from Tara Simmons. And I want to read the entirety of her statement and respond to it. So this, again, is the statement from Representative Tara Simmons, a Democrat out of Bremerton. Murder is a heinous crime, which already carries a long and serious sentence. Retired judge and former state senator Mike Heavy, who was serving in the legislature when it added drive-by shootings to the list of aggravating elements in 1995, has since become a strong advocate for its repeal and brought this to my attention. Looking back, it's clear that it was targeted at gangs that were predominantly young and black. In the 27 years since its passage, this aggravating charge has only been used once, to convict Kamonte Carter, a young black man who has since turned his life around by founding Teach, Taking Education and Creating History, which allows inmates to gain college credit by taking classes taught by other inmates. Teach has been credited by leaders of Washington's Department of Corrections with doing more to improve race relations in the state prisons than any other program. The statement from Representative Simmons goes on to say, Carter was just 11 years old when he fell into gang life and just 60 days past his 18th birthday when he committed his crime. If he had been standing outside of the vehicle at the time, he would have faced 240 to 320 months in prison. Instead, he was sentenced to life in prison with no opportunity for parole because of this law. This law's history and application, in Heavey's opinion, is what we mean when we talk about systemic racism. She ends the statement by saying, I believe in a society that believes in the power of redemption. Murder is murder, no matter where the bullet comes from, but locking young people up and throwing away the key is not the answer. To speak about this law without speaking about the only person it has ever been used on is to tell only part of the story. Removing this aggravating factor gives judges more discretion to impose a proper sentence without tying their hands. So let me read back one of those lines there at the end for you from Representative Tara Simmons. To speak about this law without speaking about the only person it has ever been used on is to tell only part of the story. I couldn't help but notice in that entire statement from Representative Simmons that she talked a lot about the killer, and she didn't talk at all about the victim. But let's do what Tara Simmons asked of us. Let's talk about, quote, the only person it has ever been used on. Let's talk about Kamonte Carter. On Saturday, May 24th, 1997, at 1:12 in the morning, along 15th Street in Tacoma's Hilltop neighborhood, Kamonte Dennis Carter, then 18 years old, piled into a vehicle along with five other young men, including his 15-year-old brother. Kamonte was armed with a Mac 90 assault rifle. Those in the car were members of the Bloods gang. They had just left a drug house up on the hilltop. And according to court records from 1997, their intent was to go do a jack, i.e. stop a car at gunpoint and rob the occupants. Well, as this crew traveled in the car just a couple blocks away from the drug house, Kamonte Carter saw a car that he believed belonged to a rival gang member. So, Without pre-warning or any provocation, Camonte Carter opened fire on that vehicle with his Mach 90, piercing it with at least 19 rounds. It turned out that the occupants of that car weren't gang members at all. They were college kids. One of them, 19-year-old Corey Pittman, was shot dead. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Corey Pittman, the person who we should be focusing this conversation on. Corey Pittman was born and raised in Tacoma. Like Camonte Carter, he was a young black man who had his entire life ahead of him. In fact, he was on summer break at the time he was killed from Alabama State University, where he was studying political science. He was a graduate of Lincoln High School in Tacoma. He had a passion for social justice issues. He served as senior class treasurer, president of the Martin Luther King Jr. Club. He was chosen as both homecoming king and Afro king at the school's African-American pageant. In his senior yearbook, there was a page students could fill out their dreams and goals for the next 10 years. On that page, Corey wrote, "Be active in my community and in my nation." Of course, Corey Pittman's dreams and goals for his future died with him on that night in 1997 on Tacoma's hilltop at the hands of Camonte Carter and a Mach 90 rifle. Right now, Camonte Carter is serving life without parole at the Stafford Creek Correction Center in Aberdeen, Washington. As Representative Simmons noted in her statement, Camonte seems as if he has taken steps to not only turn his life around behind bars, but also to help fellow inmates. After all, it has been more than 20 years, so certainly Camonte Carter is not the same person he was on the hilltop that night back in 97. Now, Representative Tara Simmons would have you believe that the debate around House Bill 1692 focuses only on Camonte Carter and on whether he deserves to get out of prison. Again, going back to her statement, "To speak about this law without speaking about the only person it has ever been used on is to tell only part of the story." And indeed, it is only telling part of the story not to focus on the young man who Camonte Carter killed. In doing research about this case, Camonte Carter's case, and about why it was the genesis for this bill, I stumbled upon a court document from when the suspects were going to trial in 1998. The court document was a short one-page, what's called a victim impact statement. This is an opportunity for family members of a victim to tell the court the impact that the crime has had on them, and then a judge can use that in determining a sentence. Well, this particular victim impact statement was written by Damian Pittman, who at the time was 18 years old, the younger brother of Corey Pittman. When I read the victim impact statement that Damian Pittman wrote back in 1998, it broke my heart, quite frankly. And so I decided to look him up and to see if he would come on the podcast to not only talk about his brother, but to talk about this proposed bill. And it was clear in our conversation that even 25 years later, this crime still impacts him and his family in a profound way. Where do you live right now, Damian?
I live in Tacoma.
Born and raised, or you grew up there from a young age?
No, I was born and raised. I left a few times, but always came home.
Take me back to the late 1990s. Tell me about your brother, Corey.
I'm sorry. Give me just a second.
That's okay. Take all the time you need.
Brother was just a good dude. It's like the, I don't know how to explain. It's like the best dude I've best person I've known. No one that I've met didn't like my brother. Generous, smart, giving. It's just, I don't know. It's everything that, you know, that a person would strive to be. I don't really think he'd be this emotional this quick.
Yeah. Was he your older brother?
My brother was older than me by 2 years.
At that time, I sent you this earlier. You wrote to the court what's called a victim impact statement about the impact that your brother's murder had on you at the time. How old were you, by the way, when he was killed?
I just sort of turned 18.
I sent you this letter. I don't suppose you'd feel comfortable reading it.
Yeah, I can read that. I'll see if I can get through it again. when my brother was killed, I didn't just lose a brother. When my brother was killed, I lost a brother, my best friend, and a role model. It was just a phone call for some advice after the semi closed, or just calling to say I loved him. I knew that whatever hardships life brought on, as long as my brother was there, everything would work out fine. But now that has been taken away from me. I sometimes feel I can't go on. So much was taken from me in one night. I still have dreams that my brother's alive. And when I wake up, I realize it was all a dream. I just feel like crying until I can't cry anymore. Sometimes I feel myself not want to be around people who have a brother to turn to because it hurts me deeply. Just realizing I used to have what they have, and I never will. Had that satisfaction of saying, me and my brother again, unless I speak in the past tense. Words can't express the way I felt with my brother, nor can words express the deep feelings of hurt that I have been forced to carry with for the rest of my life.
Damien, it's been more than 20 years since Corey was killed, and obviously it still has a pretty profound impact on you. When you read those words that you wrote when you were 18, do you go back to that place? Can you recall the impact that that had on you as an 18-year-old?
The words I use now that I'm older might have been different, but the sentiment and the feeling is the same.
Your brother, from what I've read, you know, I was able to find a couple articles at the time. He was an all-star student, was going to Alabama State University for political science. Is that right?
That is correct. Then he wanted to go to law school.
What do you believe your brother could have become? What do you think his life could have become?
The light that he's shown, what my brother was, there's nothing that he can't have done. I don't think there's anything that he wouldn't accomplish. And part of his big thing about him was social justice. So there's things he could have done. But when they killed my brother, they didn't just ruin it for me, my family. It's the world. That's what I felt. I felt you had an impact on the world.
I contacted you because of this bill, House Bill 1692, that's been proposed. First, I should ask, did any lawmakers contact you about the bill to let you know that they were considering putting something like this forward?
No, the first time I heard about this is when you contacted me, and then I looked it up a little bit to just see what it's about. But that's the first time I've heard of any of this.
The bill would remove drive-by shootings as an aggravating factor for first-degree murder, meaning that it carries with it an automatic life sentence. On its face, what is your reaction to that proposal?
Well, on the face, it just seems kind of ridiculous because, you know, a drive-by shooting is not an accident. You know, you didn't get to an argument and kill someone. Every drive-by shooting is premeditated. You knew what you were doing to go do. So to say it's not aggravated, you knew that day, I'm going to try to kill someone. And so when you're doing it from a car, they don't know it's coming up. They can't run from you. Nobody's faster than the car. They don't have any chance. So I don't understand how that's not aggravating. Like, what circumstances do you need to say this is more heinous than anything else?
There was five young men involved in not only the murder of your brother, but in the shooting of the people who were in the car with your brother who survived. Only one of them got an automatic life sentence, Kamonte Carter. Did you believe then, and do you believe now, that Kamonte deserved and deserves to spend his life in prison?
Yes, I believe then, I believe now. You killed someone. They had a Mac 90. It's as big as an AK-47, essentially. There's no reason to shoot people with it. You didn't go out hunting deer. It wasn't an accident. You saw people. You hunted them down. They chased them down in the car and shot them up and killed them. That's, you know, what else do you need to do? What's the deterrent of crime if you know you can just get out? 20 years is that long. I can remember 20 things I did 20 years ago like they were yesterday. So what's the deterrent of crime if you can kill someone at 18 and be like, I'll be out in 20 years?
one of the lawmakers, Tara Simmons, who's actually the first formerly incarcerated person ever elected to the state House of Representatives. She is one of the lawmakers behind this measure. She believes that Kamonte Carter has turned his life around behind bars. She believes that something that someone did at 18 shouldn't automatically land them a life sentence. What do you say to Representative Simmons, or what would you say to her if she were to call you to talk about this proposal?
Well, it seems biased because she's a prisoner, so I don't know that. I don't know her, so I'm not going to put personal feelings in it. But any other decision you make at 18 lasts forever. If I have a child at 18, I don't get to be like, well, I'm 24, I'm 40 now, so it doesn't count anymore. You make life decisions. You're old enough to make life decisions at 18. People go into the military at 18 and have to do the acts of war. So 18 is not an excuse. Even 18, 20, 25 is not an excuse. When you kill someone in a drive-by, it's not an accident. We know from children that you're not supposed to kill things. It's not like stepping on ants. These are people. They did a drive-by and they murdered someone. So I don't understand how they'd be like, okay, they're different. Most people in prison do change for the good or the worse. Maybe he did change for the better, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be in prison still.
Another aspect of it that she mentioned is she believes that the bill is in the interest of racial equity. She believes that adding drive-by shootings in the 90s to the list of aggravating factors was aimed at gangs who were mostly Black. Do you believe that there's some truth to that, that drive-by shootings and adding that as an aggravating factor is racist?
It's not, almost in itself saying it's racist, but saying only Black people commit. Well, I would say Black people because it said race. So only non-white people commit drive-bys then. So it seems like a racist statement. So we need to change this because only Black people are being targeted, or white or brown people are not. But, you know, regardless of what the motivation is, that's really a heinous act. What constitutes life sentence these days if not a drive-by shooting, if not a premeditated murder?
If Kamonte Carter gets out of prison, either because this bill passes, or I know he has a pending review because of his age at the time that he committed this crime, what would your message to him be?
There's nothing to say to him. Don't kill my brother. Nothing to say. I don't hope he has a good life. I have nothing to say.
Criminal justice reform, police reform, these are all issues that are constantly front and center. We have seen a rise in shootings, a rise in gang shootings, in particular, you know, in South King County, for example. As someone whose family member was killed in a drive-by shooting, what would you like to see lawmakers prioritize?
And that's actually a very good question. So I've pondered this, and not just about because of my brother being, and you know, killed because of gang violence. But if you look at the gang violence stemming from LA and just across America with the Crips and the Bloods and other ones, it's insane. What's going on in Chicago is insane. But it looks like people are worried about the people that are in prison, but there's nothing to do to help them out to prevent them from going to prison in the first place. What about social programs to stop kids from leading the crime of crime? What about getting education better? We all know education systems in poor neighborhoods are worse because the taxes don't go there. So about getting development for that, more resources in the community to prevent violence, prevent gang violence, prevent joining gangs, instead of saying, well, he joined the gang, killed someone. Let's get these guys out. What are they doing about the people who are going in? These young people are impressionable. What are they doing to prevent it? So to say something that's racial and use the drive-by for it, but they're doing nothing else in the communities to fix anything, that just doesn't seem sincere.
And just for the record of people watching, your brother was not a gang member. He was not into drugs. This was a car full of innocent people who were targeted.
Yes.
Bottom line is, Damien, if you had a vote on this, or if you could speak to lawmakers in Olympia, how would you tell them to vote on House Bill 1692?
Unequivocally, no, don't approve it. I understand I'm not the same person I was at 18. I also never killed anybody.
So that, again, is Damien Pittman, whose brother, Corey Pittman, was shot and killed in a drive-by shooting in Tacoma, Washington, back in 1997. His voice is important in this conversation and in this debate around House Bill 1692. It is important to consider the victims, to consider their families, and to consider the profound impact it has when you take a person's life. Now, I've spent the last couple shows talking about House Bill 1692, And there's a variety of reasons behind that. I believe it's an example of misguided priorities, but I also believe that there are not only better solutions to deal with the violence that we have on our streets, but to deal with the issue of criminal justice reform and with young people who sometimes end up spending their entire adult lives in prison. So coming up Sunday on the Undivided Digital Show, I'm going to turn this conversation into what can be done, into where can we go from here? You know, there are a lot of Republicans who have now, after our story, are vocally speaking out about House Bill 1692, and I think that's great. But I do think that there are some opportunities here for Democrats and Republicans to get on the same page about where we go from here together on a bipartisan basis to solve some of these issues in our society. So again, I'll have that coming up Sunday on the Undivided Digital Show. If you have not already, please make sure to subscribe to Undivided to get our full suite of content. You can do that at patreon.com/undivided, patreon/undivided, or on my Locals page, brandycruz.locals.com. The Undivided podcast is brought to you by 1530 Mortgage. You can visit them at 1530mortgage.com. As I do every week on the podcast, I like to take a moment to thank an Undivided subscriber, because without you, this show is not possible. So today I want to thank Carl Solid for being an Undivided subscriber. He joined the Undivided community on Patreon in December, and I am so, so grateful for his support and the support of so many others who believe that together we can give common sense a comeback in Washington State and beyond.